Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 301.
This week on the podcast,
hey, remember to vote.
Plus, we shouldn't have to say this so much, but don't commit acts of terrorism.
And let's keep letting people be citizens when they're born here.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Happy post-Halloween, because you're going to be listening to this the day after. We decided to combine two episodes because we did not want to record an episode the day before Election Day.
Right.
That just seemed like it was going
to
be irrelevant.
You're going to be out of town this weekend. I'm going to be out of town this weekend. And what were we going to do? Like, miss a chance to record a podcast before Election Day?
Not with our love of polling.
No.
That's not who we are. That's not as people who
and
we are.
You know what? To all those people who say that all of the polling is always wrong these days, we get it. But you know what? It's fucking fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's the one time a year that we enjoy mathematical things.
Right. And there's not nothing to learn from polling.
Well, and there's always something to learn from polling. But you have to remember that there's sometimes things you can't learn from polling.
Right.
Like, you can't poll people who weren't polled.
Well, right. And last week we talked on the podcast about, like, multiple polls that both showed, like, you know, Gillum and Bill Nelson sort of like growing their leads. You can probably gather from that might actually be a thing.
Trends. You can look for trends in polls.
Florida, last week at least, was moving in a direction.
That's right.
And so that's important, even if all the numbers are like abjectly wrong.
Well, also sometimes polls just aren't interpreted correctly. Like, they thought this a lot in 2016 during the primaries, where you would have anchors explaining, like, remember that fateful night in Michigan where Steve Kornacki explained for hours how Sanders was never going to win that state,
right?
And then it turned out the exit polling said exactly what was going to happen, which was that he was going to win, and they had just been desperate to ignore it.
Right.
Sometimes the polls aren't giving you as much of a clear directive as the news is making it seem like they are, or they're doing the opposite and they're giving you a very clear directive and the news is ignoring it. Interpreting polls is part of the art of reading polls.
Yeah.
And here's one general thing I want to say about the election. We're going to record a special episode after the election with Grant Sloss, our frequently returning friend, who also co-hosted a few times while over the summer while Brent was out of town. But one thing I'm going to say before we do that is, interpreting election results is much like interpreting polls. You have to be able to look for the victories where you can find them and also see the defeats for what they are.
Yes.
So when we look at the results on, you know, Wednesday morning, here's what the news will say no matter what happens.
Right.
Disappointing night for Democrats, because whatever number of seats they do win is not going to be the maximum number they could have won.
Right.
It will be there'll be disappointing turnout because 100% of voters are not going to turn out.
Right.
I don't expect them to because they aren't.
Probably going to have to spin the news in a positive way for you, even though it probably should have been spun in a positive way in the first place. And you know what? I hate it when we have to spin things in a positive way.
We are not
positive
people.
I was going to say, we're curmudgeons.
Yeah. It's like, I have been finding myself more and more in a position where I have to explain why there are positive signs in the news to everybody the time.
That's upsetting. That's not us.
That's
not who we are.
No, I'm literally a native New Yorker. I can find a cynical spin on literally anything.
Yeah.
But
we're going to find one on our senior senator right now to kick off the podcast.
So true. I mean, both of us have been ranting all week about this. So we're going to go over polling numbers for Senate races, for some important House races, for some gubernatorial races. But we're going to start with the polling on our very own Senate seat here in California. Feinstein is in most recent polls up 9.
Yeah, which is close.
That's considering she's an incumbent of the last 100 years.
That's right.
And will be 100 years old basically at the end of this term.
That's right.
She is not leading by the amount of numbers that you would think a person in her position might be. And that's because it's really a sort of a battle of experience versus ideology.
Right.
And we're getting used to those in the Democratic Party. That's kind of the battle right now.
Yeah. If you look at our Facebook page ever, you saw that was my personal rant that I posted on there today.
Brent had a rant today.
I don't often myself post on there sometimes, just rant-wise anyway.
Yeah.
But I really felt, because like this morning I was really triggered by a post of a room full of mostly intelligent people posted a photograph of them voting and also sending out letters to people.
Well, I saw the photo. It looked like a great event.
It looked like a great event. And like, God bless all of them for like doing the people's work.
That's right.
And they posted their voter's guide.
Right.
And I looked at it because I couldn't not.
Right. Well, you trust these people generally.
And there were some things that I was sort of like, I don't know about that. I wasn't sort of like with them on all of the props. They were like, on 8, which is easy to get confused about. Like, you know, whatever. But then they endorsed Feinstein, and I was like, and they did a little write-up about all of them. Mm-hmm. And I went to the Feinstein one immediately because that race has been constant. Like, it's been like a 2-year trigger for me, basically. Like, I can't see anything about that and not spiral out of control.
So true.
And it was just basically a lengthy diatribe about the great, wonderful Kevin DeLeon and how he's so spectacular and he's further to the left and probably represents progressive views better and has a great story because he's the son of an immigrant and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, a tiny addendum at the end, but Dianne Feinstein is the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, and that's important, so we're voting for her. No. No. You're doing it wrong.
This is a group of people who don't understand how committees work. Because here, let's clear it up once and for all. The ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, or any committee in Congress, will always be a senior member of the minority party.
It could be Patrick Leahy, who's basically as old as Dianne Feinstein, so who really cares?
Exactly.
He's been on the Judiciary Committee since, like, the 40s or something. Right? I mean, who knows, you know?
I mean,
he's almost as old as she is, for God's
sake. We lose
sake.
Literally nothing.
Nothing.
As a party. Correct. By not having Dianne Feinstein specifically as the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee.
That's right.
What we lose as a party is having a person who represents the state that they come from being a representative of the state they come from.
Correct.
Like, that committee, her seniority is not important enough here.
No.
Her committee assignments certainly aren't important enough here because, like, there will still be the same number of Democrats on the Judiciary Committee.
Having a senior person is important, but we will always have one.
Exactly. And
there will always be the person who is the next most senior on that committee.
And
some good options there. And you know what? I would contend that the people who don't have the seniority on that committee are doing a much better job. I'd much rather have Maisie Hirono on that committee.
I mean, Jesus Christ,
ranking member on that committee. Now, she won't be because she hasn't been on it very long. I would rather have Kamala Harris as the ranking member on that committee. I would probably rather have Cory Booker, and I don't even like Cory Booker.
So true.
There are basically every other Democrat I would rather have as the ranking member on that committee, regardless of whether I like Dianne Feinstein or not, and I don't, and we're going to get to why in just a second. That is not, if you are a person who is thinking to yourself how great and wonderful it would be if Kevin DeLeon was the senator from California, then fucking vote for him.
That's it.
And that's here's, it.
One thing I will also say is that one reason that a lot of people seem to think it's important to have your own senator be the ranking member of a committee is because it makes your state an important part of the discussion.
Correct.
We already have a California senator on the Judiciary Committee. Kamala Harris is on the Judiciary Committee.
And
so
with all due respect,
we're already in the conversation.
And I don't want to poo-poo the importance of the Judiciary Committee because we've just seen within the last month how important the Judiciary Committee is. But what I will say about the Judiciary Committee is that she cannot set an agenda in any way that is really going to specifically help the state of California.
Right.
Now, obviously, having Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court is something that hurts California. So I get the argument there. But, like, say she's on the Ways and Means Committee or somewhere where she can sort of, like, allocate money our way or where she could do, you know, like, yes, that committee is wildly important, and I'm not saying it's not, but she can't do anything that is going to have sort of like any kind of like California impact besides just like the broad sort of like awful national impact.
Right. And stuff that like general blue states need.
Correct.
Because it's not going to be different if another state that passes a lot of regulations that will not be, that are not beloved by the federal government is Vermont, where Patrick Leahy is from, or any of the other major blue states. So there is nothing specific to California that we gain from having her be on there. But what we do lose is having a person who represents California well on any committee or in the Senate at all.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you're wondering why we keep harping on about that, because she's a Democrat and she's been a Democrat for years, and so a lot of people don't really know what her positions are other than that, we're going to tell you.
Right.
To begin with, she is a Democrat from a blue state, a deep blue state, who is not in favor of Medicare for all.
That's right.
So, like, go home. That's the first thing. Because it's
just 1 year ago, she was talking about how she thought Donald Trump had the capability to learn and become a great president.
So true. Yeah, she has not. She's shown a pattern of indecisiveness when it comes to condemning Trump's actions, when it comes to condemning his nominees.
Right.
Even people that are blatantly problematic.
Right. We had to call her and remind her that she shouldn't be voting for Jeff Sessions because he was a racist.
Right. We have to call and remind her about everything, and she doesn't have enough phone lines for that. California has 36 million people. We have the same number of phone lines as every other fucking state in the country. There is not enough time in my day to spend 4 hours waiting on hold to talk to Dianne Feinstein's office.
We just need her to... No.
There are things that I respect that you as a senator would want to know from your constituents, but not the broad stuff. Not do we need a racist attorney general?
Right.
Not are we in favor of having health care? Not should we go to war in Iraq? Not should we pass the Patriot Act? She is a co-sponsor of the Patriot Act and the Patriot Act renewal bill. She authorized voted to authorize the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
She has voted to make it easier for intelligence agencies to wiretap American citizens.
Yeah.
She's in favor of the death penalty and mandatory minimum sentences. She voted for the 94 crime bill that made the Clintons persona non grata among the left.
She hasn't been in favor of legalization of marijuana. I think she's sort of waffling her way around that currently. But that's...
She's like Andrew Cuomo. She's like an oldster who
a state that it is now legal.
Like, fully.
So she could... claim that she was, even if she wasn't, and she would be fine.
She should just...
Like, fighting that one, she's sort of doing it at her own peril. Like, that doesn't even make any sense.
But she has a history, as a mayor of San Francisco, she vetoed a bill to extend domestic partnership benefits to same-sex couples. That includes things like health insurance. She is not... Her voting record shows that she's not adverse to government censorship and of the internet and things like that. She authored a bill that would have forced local law enforcement agents to comply with federal ICE agents.
Yeah.
Like, She's not a progressive hero.
No.
She's not even really a moderate hero because her one piece of signature legislation was an assault weapon ban that is the most watered-down form of gun control and had a fucking sunset provision.
It has now expired. Yeah.
So we don't have an assault weapon ban because her signature legislation on gun control, that is her issue. That is her that is what she is known for, was allowed to expire.
And she has proclaimed in a television ad, which is one of the worst television ads I've ever seen by a politician, like literally in
time,
like since the dawn of like moving pictures,
right?
Like, where she, do you remember this in the primary where she ran headlines like after some of these school shootings happened? What was the one like at the elementary school that was
Sandy Hook?
Yeah. Where she was like, I vowed after Sandy Hook that we would never have another school shooting, and I have fought it was just sort of like, we have.
It's like so many.
And I'm certainly not blaming her for them. But I'm just sort of like, now I'm just ragging on her sort of even just political
acumen. Well, I'm ragging on her ineffectiveness.
Right.
Because if this is your signature issue.
Right.
We have.
Then let's get her done.
Let's go bold.
Yeah.
It's time. We did it. It's time to go bold.
She's not a bold goer.
But she's not a bold goer. That's why, I'm not here to to speculate about what she did with the accuser letters for Kavanaugh and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I know I know a lot of the left is angry about that, and I'm sort of vaguely angry about it, but I'm also kind of like, I don't know what's going on.
Sure.
But what I do know is that her record shows that she is not a shepherd of the values that California currently holds.
Correct.
And we do better, even if we only have, even if we have two junior senators, which is impossible to have, but we do better to have a senator who accurately represents our values as people who see ourselves as the leaders of the resistance than we do to have a senator who can't even come out in favor of fucking marijuana.
Yeah.
We're all high in this state.
Right. I'm high now.
Brent's high now.
I'm not, actually.
I mean,
but I could be.
Literally, this is a state of people that are just high. We're just high. We're high all the time.
You know what? And we're doing great.
It's going well.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know? So, like, let's make a choice that allows our values to be part of the discussion in the federal government instead of making a choice that is based on, like, one final point before we move on.
Yeah.
We wrote about this during the 2016 primaries. And I think this also applies to this race.
Yes.
Experience and good ideas are not the same thing.
That's right.
We said that about Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Because she was a warmonger, and we said, her foreign policy has affected how safe we are as Americans, and not in a good way. And just because she has experience with foreign policy doesn't mean she's had good ideas. Dianne Feinstein...
She had a long list of bad ideas, as a matter of fact.
Right. She's had the power to enact them all. That's why, it's not why shit is so terrible right now, but it's part of the reason why.
Sure.
Dianne Feinstein is in a similar boat. She's had many years to have ideas.
Right.
And
hundreds.
Because of that, she has a lot of experience having the ideas.
Right.
It's just that the ideas she has aren't good.
That's right.
And the important thing when you are a constituent...
Right.
It's not whether or not someone has a long history of... Chuck Grassley has a lot of experience.
Think about the people
who do have the experience.
That are your, and not even in the United States Senate. I'm going to just personally, in your life, think about the coworkers.
That's right.
That you work with on a daily basis that have all of the experience. And then think about whether all of them are really great at their job.
Yeah. I think that says it all.
There it is. That's it. I don't even have to answer whether they are or aren't.
You know.
I know what you're thinking.
Yeah. It's so true. Moving on to other states.
Yeah.
Because I think we pretty much covered that.
I think we have.
Let's talk about Texas.
Sure.
The latest polling has Cruz up about 5 to 10 points. So they really need turnout there. But there's a chance in this race because it's gotten so much attention that a lot of randos show up for it.
Yep.
So it's kind of, it's not a toss-up. It's leaning Republican. But we still have the power to fix that.
Yeah, we do. And I actually, I'm hoping that people are just sort of like waking up to the awfulness of Ted Cruz, including Cruz supporters, because obviously we need a lot of new voters there. We need first-time voters. We need massive amounts of maybe people who have like not voted in midterms before.
Right.
Like, we're going to have to see like a real wave. Like, that's where a wave
really
actually
matters.
Needs to happen.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that, you know, there was an interesting post that I saw a lot of people sharing on Facebook today about that somebody wrote for a newspaper there that was basically like, I'm pro-life, but I'm voting for O'Rourke because I'm tired of being used by Ted Cruz.
Ooh.
Basically.
Yeah.
And like, there needs to be some of that going on down there too, because you can't just, you need more than a blue wave still in Texas.
Yeah.
Pretty soon a blue wave
will be enough.
Will get you there.
Yeah.
But it's not yet.
Well, and this is a race actually specifically that I predict if O'Rourke doesn't win, and I think there's a good chance he doesn't, that the news the next day will be like, Democrats smashed. Failures all around. Everything sucks. And I need everyone to take a breath and remember that having a true Senate race in Texas is a big fucking deal.
Yeah. And if you look at the polling for the Greg Abbott, who is their
the governor.
Governor there, he is polling like over 20% ahead of the Democrat that he's running against there. And obviously O'Rourke is running way ahead than Hillary Clinton did in 2016.
Right.
So
these are gains.
Like, those are,
and these are also, O'Rourke is pulling a lot of new people into the process. Those people, if you vote, if you're first
vote. And he's a good candidate. He, you know, it could be the type, he may be able to become the senator from Texas
next time.
In the next election.
Yeah.
Maybe not against Ted Cruz.
He's going to, the enthusiasm about him is going to have legs even if he doesn't win. So when you see the headline on Wednesday that proclaims that the Democrats are failures because Beto O'Rourke didn't win Texas against a sitting incumbent who's one of the most high profile Republicans. Stop reading that article. Look at what the actual turnout says and remind yourself that up until a couple years ago, it didn't look like anyone was going to be challenging Ted Cruz for anything.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz is a man who won various primaries in the presidential race.
Yeah.
He's a high-profile Republican.
Yeah,
he has a lot of money.
Beautiful Ted.
Beautiful Ted. That's right.
Yikes.
But he won the Iowa caucuses. In a sense. In a way. I mean, he won with 24% of the vote as opposed to 23 and 22 or whatever. I mean, he basically tied the Iowa Cup. But I'm saying, this is a man who has had a lot of attention for a long time.
Yeah.
Don't let him winning his own seat be the thing that makes you think that Texas can't be turned. They can be turned.
Right. Speaking of Iowa, and we don't have the polling in front of us here.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But just before we move on, because it's in my brain right now, Steve King might finally we do have it. I'm sorry.
Well,
ahead of myself because we're talking about Senate races, but you said Iowa and
it got exciting.
It got me there.
This actually, I called my mom today and she was like, you have to talk about Steve King's race.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to talk about Steve King's race, of course. Okay. And she was like, Brent's going to love it.
I know.
She was very excited.
Should we do it now or should we get to it later?
No, let's get to it later.
Let's do the Senate polls.
We're going to do the rest of the
Senate
polls.
We have a plan here. Let's stick to it.
That's right. We're going to do the rest of them quickly, though. In Arizona, Kristen Sinema is up 4, according to a CNN poll, and Fox has them tied, which Fox doesn't want to have them tied. So that's that race is moving in her direction, which is great. Dean Heller is down 3 points right now in Nevada.
See?
That's new, too. He's been leading consistently by 2 to 7 points this entire time, and suddenly Jackie Rosen just pulled ahead in the most recent polls. Claire McCaskill's race is tied.
Yeah.
That race wasn't looking good for a while. But, you know, she could still lose it. And, you know, would it be the saddest thing in the world? As a broad thing, sure, be sad for Democrats. Sure. Wouldn't be the saddest thing for our Democrats.
No.
Listen, Heidi Heitkamp's going to lose, and we just need to deal with that fact.
Yeah.
But also...
You know what? I'm dealing quite gracefully with it.
I'm dealing with it beautifully.
I get that, like, if we want to sort of, like, take back the Senate and, like, actually be able to put a stop to sort of this administration in very meaningful ways, then we... need Heidi Heitkamp there.
But in a world where we're not going to win the Senate anyway, I sort of like, she's one of those people where we just have to keep fighting after she's elected. It's like, we can never trust her to do the right thing.
But these polling...
But they don't know how to poll this state. Right.
And these polls also, what I think, because the next one that we're going to talk about is Bill Nelson, who is ahead of Rick Scott.
Yeah.
Barely, you know, we sort of mentioned that at the top when I was referencing last week's polls. But like... This is, I saw a poll that had John Tester ahead in Montana. Mm-hmm. I am still, like, you know, in my dreams at night, picture the Democrats taking back the Senate.
Well, a lot of these races are slowly moving to the left.
Right.
So, in, you know, if you look at the polling over the last month.
Arizona is a pickup. Nevada is a pickup. Mm-hmm. Like, if Claire McCaskill can sneak that out, like, yes, maybe Heidi Heitkamp wins, but it looks like Joe Manchin is going to hold on. We talked about that, I think, last week. It looks like Joe Donnelly might possibly hold on.
Joe Donnelly's up by almost 10 in his race right now.
It looks like Bill Nelson might possibly hold on. I mean, we don't need to flip that many of these guys. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's 51 to 49 right now. If anything else, we could maybe at least get it back to 50-50, and then I know there's still the Mike Pence factor, but I mean... You know,
it gives us a little more leverage,
at least something, you know, I just don't think there's a chance that we might not wake up. I think a lot of people sort of like if they were putting all their money on a bet, they would say it's going to be, maybe it's going to be 53 to 47. And it might be.
Right.
And I'm not saying it won't be, but it might also not be.
But dream big.
Right.
Show up like you're going to win.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
yes.
Show up like you're going to win. Here, before we move on to the House. Some adorable news.
Oh, yeah.
There's somebody running against Bernie Sanders in Vermont. Sanders is up 41 points in that race. But the guy, his name is Lawrence Zupin.
Sure it is.
And he has this really verbose bio on his website that's super hilarious and manages to mention Venezuela, right away.
Obviously.
In Vermont. Like, I'm like, get a hold of yourself, guy. But in any case, it's the most adorably Vermont thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Moving on to the House. 31 House seats are currently rated toss-ups. 14 GOP seats are leaning or likely Democrats. That's according to Real Clear Politics, and that is a lot of seats.
Yes.
So
what do we need? 23, 24,
I think we
25?
Need 23?
I think it's 23.
Maybe this helicopter can tell us.
Maybe. Yeah, it's flying really close to us.
Exactly.
Shout it out if you know, helicopter.
No, it's here to monitor the Halloween festivities. Yeah. We're in Halloween Ground Zero, by the way, you guys.
Yeah.
If you hear anything crazy going on outside.
Yeah.
So a couple of exciting races. First of all, in this week's polling, Antonio Delgado in CD19 in New York State just pulled ahead by 5 points.
Oh, my gosh.
He's been down this whole time.
I love it.
Fazzo is, in some polls, has a one-point lead.
Ugh, Fazzo.
But the most recent Monmouth poll, which just came out, shows Delgado up by 5.
Yeah, guys.
5.
Get it.
That's it, you guys.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like he's actually someone who, over the course of this election, has... shown sort of like the curve of a new candidate where, you know, he didn't really know what he was doing when he first started running. And because of that, he made some blunders. But he's been very receptive to feedback, including the feedback of my families.
Yeah.
And he has improved as a campaigner, like, pretty dramatically to the point where a lot of people in my parents' district are now sort of like, we could work with him.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people who were, like, adamantly against him in the primaries are now sort of like, we can work with this guy.
Yeah.
So I'm... thrilled to see. I feel so proud of him.
Yeah.
Because that was like, for a while I was like, this guy is not going to be able to pull it out because he doesn't have a message. And his message has evolved.
If he wins, you should take personal credit.
Well, I'm going to, obviously. I'm not insane. Yeah. But I mean, he now, like the last time my parents saw him speak, he had a very clear message. He had policy ideas. A lot of the things that were sort of missing early on in his campaign have come into place, and he's doing a really good job campaigning now.
Yeah,
so that's exciting. And then in Iowa, in Steve King's district, they have a sort of mini Beto running down there, it sort of seems like.
Yeah, they do. He's his name's J.D. Scholten, and he is – and I want to talk about him because, A, please, God, let him win, because Steve King just even recently has sort of realigned himself with, like, you know, white nationalists. Yeah. And
the GOP pulled out of his race because he's a racist.
He's like, so have like some of his like corporate, like, I think, like, Land O'Lakes gives him money usually because, like, I think they're located there. And, like, the Sioux City paper, which is the largest city in that district, has endorsed him every one of his races, and he's been in the House for 16 years, and they finally endorsed J.D. Shulton. And he is running the campaign that is what people should be running on and proving everyone wrong in the face of, like, oh, well, you would have to run a moderate in this race. Because J.D. Shulton is for Medicare for All.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't hire a... There's a really good piece in Rolling Stone about him right now. He didn't hire a campaign strategist for a really long time because he couldn't find one that wouldn't tell him to stop talking about immigration.
Right.
Because it's a huge... Obviously, that's a thing that, like, King scares up everyone about. Yep. And it's a huge issue in that... It's a huge... ag district.
Yeah.
And so he was like, no, I'm going to talk about immigration. Like, it's huge here. We need the workers. There's a huge immigrant population in this district. We have a lot of hog farms. I've spoken to people who, like, run hog farms that are like, we need the labor. Like, he's like, I'm not going to not talk about this. Yeah. Like, he's running a very... Bernie Sanders has been there with him.
Right.
Like, he was seen in Western Iowa with Bernie Sanders and didn't see a problem with it. He is close. The polling there shows that Steve King might finally lose. And for 8 terms, people have either been, A, not running against Steve King because they
classic
thought
game
it was
strategy.
Unwinnable, or have been running, like, boring moderate campaigns against Steve King. And you come here and you've got, yes, like, Beto O'Rourke / Bernie Sanders / you know, young guy who just, like, has some excitement. And he is actually the guy who could do it. So to anyone who is just sort of like, oh, well, this is a very conservative district, we have to find the most boring person we can to put on the ballot. No!
That never works, by the way, because what are you offering as a boring moderate person?
Right.
If you go in and you're like, here's what I see as my vision.
Right.
We're a district where immigration actually really matters because we're an ag district where we rely on immigrant labor.
Right.
Let's talk about it.
Well, and he said, he was like, the number one thing that I hear at all of my... town halls, and he's been to all 39 counties in that district 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's a big district, too, because there's no people in
it. Because there's no humans, right. Yeah, exactly. Definitely more pigs.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
More hogs, for sure. And he said that it's always healthcare. And you're hearing that from a lot of Democrats
Everywhere in the country.
And so, like, why wouldn't you then run on Medicare for all?
That's,
like, I mean,
I don't understand, also, in a world where... Steve Schmidt can't endorse a healthcare policy because a majority of Republicans are in favor of Medicare for All. Why every Democrat on the ballot isn't running in favor of it. It's a clear winner. 70% of Democrats and 51% of Republicans are in favor of it.
Yeah.
Run on that shit.
Yeah.
You can run on that shit in a deep red district.
Yeah.
Because if a majority of Republicans are for it, then your deep red district might be in favor of Medicare for All. I'm sorry to tell you.
Yep.
So... that's very exciting. And he's also been making the rounds. He was on Pod Save America. He's kind of like getting the attention he deserves now. So
he is.
That's
first time candidate for anything, by the way.
A former minor league baseball player, I believe. Yeah. So, you know, exciting origin story.
Yeah.
And then we want to talk about some of the California districts
that
are
because as we've told you, like, basically 1/5 of the amount of seats needed to flip the House.
Can be won in California.
Or within about an hour of you and I.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about those 5 now.
So there's Dana Rohrabacher in CA48.
Yep.
Rohrabacher is now up 2 points in the most recent polling, but it's been basically a toss-up. They've been sort of going back and forth. So nobody really knows whether him or Ruta is leading that district. And if you're in that district, your vote really matters. So please show up.
Yeah.
In the 25th CD, Steve Knight versus Katie Hill. Katie Hill is one of the candidates that's gotten the most attention from, like, Angelino-style people, because she's kind of, like, an exciting progressive candidate.
Yes, it's close by. She's a, like, she's a millennial. She has really funny ads.
Right.
Like, she's been campaigning, like, with the cast of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, a lot of celebrities have gone up to...
People are really loving on Katie Hill, and, like, it seems like that could maybe drive... turnout there. I also know some people who have been canvassing there as well. Like, that's really sort of like, if you're in Los Angeles and you're in a safe district, with which most people are,
that's where
the
you're
closest
heading.
One. And, like, I've seen so many people on Facebook being like, Katie Hill, I'm canvassing for Katie Hill. And, like, keep doing it.
A lot of people who have been posting that they've never canvassed before and have decided to go canvass
But she's a fun candidate.
Yeah.
Like,
and that race is very close. It's sort of... Yeah. Right now, Steve Knight is up 4 points, but last week she was up 4 points. So the polling is sort of all within the margin of error and very kind of like wildly toss-up-y. Yeah. So that is a district that could flip.
Yeah.
And then there's also Katie Porter's district, or Mimi Walters' district, that could become Katie Porter's district.
Right.
The 45th CD. Porter is up like 7 points in the polling. She's been up pretty consistently. Now, here's the thing. Katie Porter, not the most progressive candidate.
True.
That's not the most progressive district. So, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
She, the one...
And here's where I would sort of, you know, I sort of just said, like, you have to, you can run on a progressive agenda there. Or, you know, anywhere. And, like, I still contend that that is mostly true. The place where I feel like maybe you might have a little bit more trouble with that is in a non-working class.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing about Steve King's district. It's a very working class. Right. So, like, Medicare for All is going to play with
it's
people there,
there
who are worried about their healthcare costs. The Mimi Walters district is, like, Laguna.
Yeah. It's Laguna, it's upper middle class white
like,
people.
I was going to say, it's retired people and it's rich white people.
Yeah.
And so that is maybe a place where someone like Katie Porter is better suited than a J.D. Scholten is.
Yeah. So Katie Porter is one of a couple of people who are running in these tight races who came out against the gas tax. So we have a prop here that is very controversial.
Well, and that
about
is
the
a,
gas tax.
You know, and as and much I, as I hate to say this, like I think
see
that's,
why.
I see why too, because that is a thing that, excuse me, Republicans are hoping, at least in California, is going to drive turnout.
Yeah.
I think that's a pipe dream on their part.
Agreed.
But the fact that she came out of it, I think, takes away a talking point that Mimi Walters probably thought she was going to have against a Democrat that she was running. So,
exactly.
Like, I get it. I don't like it, but I get it.
That's it. Kate, that race is one of those races where I'm like, listen, I probably won't go canvass there because I don't feel comfortable doing it. But, like, you should if you do.
Yeah.
You know? That's that's kind of the feeling. In the 10th CD, Jeff Denham versus Josh Harder. Harder has a slight edge in the polling. He's the Democrat. He was up about 2 points in last week's polls, at least. And then in the 39th CD, Young Kim versus Gil Cisneros. Gil Cisneros is that lottery winner that I have a lot of complicated feelings about. The polling's all over the place. According to the most recent polls, Cisneros is up one. Meaning that's not a mark. I mean, that's nothing. But by the end of September, at the end of September, Kim was up like 10. So the race is tightening, but no one really knows what's going on in that race.
Well, and in all of these districts, and I mean, this seems like such a silly thing to say, and we've said it already 10 times on this podcast, these specific districts could very much be flipped on turnout.
Yes. And this is exactly the kind of race where turnout truly matters. So if you, and you know what? How fun to live in California and get your vote to actually count.
Right? Because it never does.
Brent and I never get to have our vote fucking count. That's why we lodge protest votes so often.
I know.
But if you live in one of these districts that's just outside LA or in Central or Northern California, you get to really matter. That's fun.
That's exciting.
People are going to come campaign to you and then you get to be like, you know what? My vote counts.
I know. My house race is Adam Schiff running basically unopposed.
Actually, do you want to hear my secret plan?
Sure. Yeah, please.
I kind of want to run against him next time, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I want to run against him on a single-issue campaign that is just Medicare for All.
Oh, I
because
like
he
that.
Is another person who is not strong on healthcare, and I need him to be stronger.
Yeah.
I get that we have this guy who is running for office in our district.
God, do it.
But I kind of am like, I was sort of like, I don't want to just sit idly by while some of these very powerful moderate Democrats have fallen.
Right.
And be like, oh, I can't do anything about this idiot. It's one thing to be like, oh, Adam Schiff is better than a Republican, of course.
Right.
But we're still talking about a former Blue Dog Democrat who is incredibly moderate and is representing West Hollywood and Silver Lake.
Yeah. Exactly.
So someone should at least question him.
Yeah, I agree.
Someone should raise the issue.
Yeah.
I mean, I would prefer someone else do it. But like, if no one else steps up, maybe I'll just do it. Because I don't even know why we would tolerate that in this district.
No, I don't either.
It doesn't make any sense. In any case. Governor's races.
Couple of governor's races.
Florida, very close. Gillum has been up pretty consistently, but the race is sort of tightening. He's been up by as much as 5 and as little as 1.
Yeah.
Stuff came out this week about how he's a little more friendly with moneyed interests and corporate types and than we'd like.
But you know what?
But
he's not a racist.
Exactly. I feel like...
So pick your battles if you're
in
Florida.
I can understand why that's upsetting. And we should certainly know this.
Yes.
But still vote for and vote in the race the way that you need to vote to feel okay about yourself. And I would say that between him and a open racist.
Right. I loved his line. Did you see that line from one of their debates where they were at, because DeSantis has like spoken at some sort of like white nationalist rallies and things like that. Like, yeah, shocking, exactly. And so they asked Gillum if he thought DeSantis was a racist, and he said, "I'm not saying that he's a racist, but I'm saying that the racists think he's a racist." I was like,
"Oh, I like that."
Yeah, nice.
That's it.
Right? That's
it. He did it.
Answered.
That's
asked and answered.
I wanted to talk about the main gubernatorial race only because I think it's so hilarious that LePage is the governor there. So
isn't that shocking?
Like, just every day it shocks me to remember that.
Yeah.
But the Democrat there has been up pretty consistently by about 8 points.
Great.
So it looks like they're going to have a Democratic governor up, because that's what ranked choice voting can buy you guys, is the ability to not have Paul LePage split the vote and be the governor.
Yeah.
And then in Alaska, they have a very tight race going on there, newly tight, because it's an open seat, but the race just tightened up this week. The Republican in that race, Dunleavy, had been up by like 7 to 14 points. He was kind of, you know, in that range.
Oh, and didn't somebody pull out and then endorse the Democrat?
Yeah, I think so.
There was another person
in the race, and now it's basically tied.
Right, and it's Mark Begich, who
is Mark Begich,
senator from there.
Right.
Right? Former senator from Alaska, so he's got name recognition.
Exactly.
Too, so,
So
one thing, I want to skip back to Florida really quick.
Yeah, let's do
Again,
it.
I'm going out of order. I'm skipping back to House races now. There was a report today, I don't know if you saw it, and I don't know how much credence we can give it, because it was sort of like leaked anonymously, and it was also supposedly from like some Republican polling that was done internally. If we're to believe this anyway.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, because I'm ready to believe it.
Yeah.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz could be about to lose to Tim Canova, who's running against her as an independent.
Oh my God.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe I didn't see that, because that would have been maybe what I led with.
Yeah, I know, right? Sorry, I should have sent it to you immediately.
Well,
but
I didn't.
I was busy today.
Right. Brent had
worked.
Was at work.
Had a job.
Exactly.
Today. It was upsetting. But anyway.
Also, you are in California, our prop sheet is out. It's on our site. We explain all 11 state props in terms that you can understand that are also kind of funny, a little humorous, you know? And so that is something to look out if you are wondering who to vote for.
We have
answers
on everything else too.
Like email us.
Like, you went through and literally looked at all of those judicial appointment options, and
I mean, an interesting thing on the ballot here that maybe we should just explain, because why not?
Sure.
Which is that we have confirmation votes on judges that we already have on the bench.
Yeah.
So there are a bunch of people who are not running opposed to anything. We just vote yes or no on them.
Yeah.
I have gone through and identified which of them were appointed by Republicans and Democrats or have specific political leanings.
Yeah.
If that's information any of you want. If the LA Times argues that we should vote yes on all of them to maintain an independent judiciary, and I can see the reasoning in that as well. In the post-Kavanaugh era, I'm sort of less likely to think that the judiciary can be truly independent in this moment.
Yeah.
So there's that to think about as well.
I did some,
but I'm happy to discuss the research.
I took your research and did some very willy-nilly voting on that.
I love it. I'm all for willy-nilly voting when it comes to judging.
Because I actually did end up mailing my ballot in. I know I said I was going to go vote on the day, but that mail-in ballot was staring me in the face days and days and days. And I was like, I'm opening this. And then once I opened it, the ship had sailed.
Yeah, so. No, exactly.
But anyway.
If I had a mail-in ballot with me right now, because I get more and more nervous about vote. Like, I get more excited to vote the more people are doing it.
Yes,
I know. So now it's like everyone's voting and I'm like, I can't vote yet. That's so annoying.
I know.
But I do on the day. You know what I also find on the day is that I often end up helping a person who is not on the rolls for whatever reason or is having a technical glitch.
Yeah.
Deal with that at the polls. Like, I'm like an independent poll watcher, basically. Like, I'm always solving problems for people at the polls.
I
feel like it's my civic duty to go to the polls, because I do know what everyone's rights are.
Yes.
And so I know that when they're told at the polls, even if they live in the district, that they're not on the rolls or can't find them or whatever, that they can cast a provisional ballot. That, you know, like, I'm good at ushering people through that process.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of old people in our district, so there's a lot of people who get sort of cast aside easily.
It might be too late, but you should be a poll worker.
I know it's too late to be a poll worker, but I kind of, you know, my freelancing is its own thing.
Yeah.
But so I like to go to the polls because I always end up helping someone
polls.
But so in any case, don't not vote, whatever
Correct.
You do. If you need us to literally go through your ballot in another state and tell you who to vote for, we'll do it. I mean, we're not, you know, braintrustapproved@gmail.com is our email address. You can contact us on social media at Braintrust Live. We are living by the dictum of the website I just launched with my parents, Vote Captain, where we will do anything that we can do to help you vote. And that includes helping you look up your public transit options. That includes helping you find out where your polling place is, or, you know, what hours the polling, you know, what hours your polling place is open, or whatever you need. You can call us and we will help you figure that out, because we want to make sure everyone has access to voting. And it's not as easy to vote as a lot of people pretend like it is.
Yeah.
It's easy to vote if you've done it before and you understand the process. If you are new to the process, it can be very overwhelming.
Totally.
And we want to make sure that it's not overwhelming for you.
Yeah.
Person who is listening to our podcast. Right. So in any case, and also feel free to share our voter guide far and wide.
Yes.
It always makes it into a lot of strange hands. And that is because very few people are writing voter guides that are in layman's terms.
That's, I know.
Honestly, exactly. Is what it is. That's because at least if you don't agree with our reasoning.
Wrong ones.
Correct. but if you don't agree with our reasoning, that's fine. But we also explain why we're voting for something. Right. And that's, you know, a way to at least find out what you think.
That's right.
So do that. Again, don't commit acts of terrorism. This week was rife with acts of terrorism, and it's just like nobody has time.
No, we know we missed some. We only talked about electoral politics because that's what
us.
We like to do.
That's our bread and
butter. We are aware that it's been a really shitty week.
Right.
And also,
don't let all of this make you feel like, oh, voting doesn't matter because everything's falling apart or whatever. Just, you do what you can do when you can do it.
Right.
You always vote just in case. Maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe it does, you know?
Yep.
Why not try?
That's right.
You know? So you vote just in case. You get your family to vote just in case.
Yep.
You vote just in case it prevents the president from not letting people who are born here be citizens.
That's because he can't do that.
He can't do that, you guys. He believes he can. And in this reality, who knows if that's enough? I mean, it could be.
It doesn't really matter.
No. There are anchor babies in families far and wide, including my own.
Right.
I wrote a thing.
Because the Constitution allows it.
That's right. I wrote a thing for Huffington Post a few years ago about this, back when the anchor baby conversation first started. I specifically name-checked Lindsey Graham, so I know this is his wet dream.
Yep.
But even in on the waspiest side of my family, on the came here in the 1600s side of my family, there is an anchor baby.
Sure.
They can happen to any of us. And you know what? Such is life.
That's it.
People that are born here can't be here illegally because they were just born.
That's right.
That's
it.
So in any case.
Nailed it.
That's some of the news this week. But remember to vote.
Yeah.
And if you have any issues, drop us a line. We'll figure them out for you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.